Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Today, Andre, we are getting a super in-depth, very transparent look and a really unique angle at a side of the automotive industry that we're not always great about covering.
Exactly. We have a lot of questions. You send us a lot of questions about how do you buy a brand new vehicle, and we're going to have an expert in the business tell us all about it.
Yeah, really excited about this one. Steve has been involved in the automotive dealer world for over 2 decades. He's going to tell us the good, the bad, the ugly, the very ugly, and some more good about what it's like operating a dealer in 2024 and some really cool, fully transparent behind-the-scenes details. So let's cut to Steve right now. Steve, thanks for coming on, buddy. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Good to see you guys.
And Steve, do you mind introducing yourself a little bit, who you're with?
Yeah, we're with I'm with Garnet Auto Group. We're a small group out of southeastern Pennsylvania, right around the Philadelphia area. We have 2 Volkswagen points, 1 Audi point, and a Ford store, as well as a parts wholesale distribution center, as well as a Ford Quick Lane independent service center.
Wow. And Steve, tell us a little bit about how you got into the industry.
Yeah, it's a funny story because it was a job in high school. I started taking out the trash in the shop after school during high school. And my uncle had worked at the dealership, Ford store right here in the same area. And I had during the summer, we had a 120 car rental fleet, which is rare these days. But back then, that was a thing. Wow. Where we did the Ford Rent-A-Car program, and they needed help because someone was out on maternity. So they kind of plugged me in over the summer. And as I was graduating high school, now this is in 1998. So the internet sales was like mind-blowing to a traditional salesperson. The salespeople didn't even want to talk to the internet customer back then because they're like, they already know everything. They know the invoice price. I don't want to talk to somebody who knows the invoice price. You can imagine that even being a thing. But in 1998, they were like, you know how to use a computer. Do you want to try selling cars on the internet? That was in 1998, and here we are today. So
you were the pioneer. Yeah. You were one of the pioneers of the internet for
Auto by Tell was a big thing. I don't know if you, Tommy, that's way before your time, but Auto by Tell was like, it used to come via fax. Wow. Internet leads used to come via fax. So yeah, it was a whole different world, but nonetheless, that's kind of how I got into this world. But I was spent some time in the service department, of course, sales, internet sales, the rental loaner side of it, all over the place. And 2005 was the year I became a manager, and you know, since all the way since 2005. Now I'm the general manager of these 2 stores, the Audi and the VW store. And like I said, we have the other stores down in Westchester, Pennsylvania, which is a Ford store and a VW store, also side by side. So that's a little bit about me.
Very cool. Looking to ship a car or truck? Check out Uship, the sponsor of today's episode. It's an online marketplace where shippers with extra space in their trucks or bandwidth to haul your vehicle bid for the right to pick up and deliver it wherever it needs to go. Here's how it works. Go to the Uship website or app, enter your vehicle's information where it needs to go and when you want it shipped, and then sit back and relax. Quotes from multiple shippers usually come in minutes, and there's no obligation to book a shipment. You are welcome to post your vehicle and destination for a no-risk estimate of how much you need to budget for the job. Uship's protection plan covers your vehicle in case of damages or circumstances beyond your control. Uship will ship just about anything, cars, boats, motorcycles, even horses. Check them out by clicking the link below or download the app and plan your next shipment today.
Well, Steve, I kind of want to break down the dealer's role in baby steps. So let's go like way back and kind of understand, how does the dealer interact with the customer and how does the dealer interact with the automaker? So can you kind of explain the purpose of the dealership? And you know, you're associated with, let's say, Volkswagen, but you're not a part of Volkswagen. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's much like you would say, like maybe a McDonald's, an In-N-Out burger, or something like that, where, you know, people see the consumer oftentimes sees us as Volkswagen and Ford. But ultimately, we're no different than if we were, you know, a standalone mom and pop store. We have to operate within their rules in terms of, like, if we wanted to change the look and feel of our buildings, really can't do that. We have to be very regimented in terms of what we'd represent for the brand. There's some pretty specific guidelines there. But ultimately, when it comes to taking care of customers, it's not governed by the manufacturer, which is why you get into this, you know, charging over sticker, taking money off the car. What to the, you know, that aspect of it is the franchisee controls all of that.
Yeah,
but people don't often understand this.
Right,
we get a lot of emails and questions, and just on social media. You know, I went to this dealership, and I will never buy another X brand, because they associate that store with the entire company.
Interesting,
really.
Yeah.
It's a problem. It's a problem for we don't sell over sticker. We never sold over sticker, even all through COVID. We're very much a customer focused group. So for us, the whole selling through COVID, over MSRP, markups, all that craziness that went on actually helped us, because it was easier to sell cars, because people would, you know, shop around and they're like, oh, so you're not charging over sticker? No, that's silly. Don't pay over sticker.
Interesting.
So I want to get into that in a second. I think that's a really important topic to discuss. But just to kind of even dial it back a little bit more. So your dealership is its own separate business from the main manufacturer. And obviously you work closely. Now, the way you obtain cars is interesting. And once again, like building blocks, the company doesn't give you the car to sell on their behalf. The car companies sell you the vehicle. Is that how that works, Steve?
Yep. So they you know, the term is floor plan. It's basically a loan that the dealership signs up for. Okay, you know, maybe Volkswagen says you guys are approved for $10 million. And as soon as that vehicle leaves the factory, we pay for it. The dealership pays for it. It goes on our quote unquote floor plan. And then most manufacturers give you a certain amount of time where they don't charge you interest on that car to encourage flipping that inventory quickly and keeping everything fresh and moving. And then say after 60, 90 days, whatever it is, it's a percentage. You pay interest. We basically have a car payment on every car on the lot after a certain period of time. So
interesting.
Yeah. So the manufacturer gets paid right away.
Okay, very interesting. So they get their cut right away. And then in terms of the actual sales side of the car, once the dealer obtains the car, does the manufacturer engage in the sales process at all?
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Only with the incentives.
Okay.
So the manufacturer will often put incentives on certain model lines that they're trying to incentivize, because each region of the country kind of has, on the manufacturer side, kind of has their like bosses. So like the Northeast region has a particular, you know, sales manager, so to speak. And as the layers go up, you know, it'll come down to them. Hey, our Atlases, we have too many Atlases in stock. We have to come up with a regional plan to incentivize the lease a little better, or do what, you know, Toyota's lease is this, Ford's lease is this, we need to be competitive in there. And that's regional. And the reason that is that way is Mustang convertibles in February in Buffalo may take a little more to sell than in Miami. So
yeah,
they do have some of that flexibility in there built into the region itself, where the manufacturer will then, you know, monitor what's selling, what's not selling, and then adjust the prices appropriately.
Interesting.
Now, because your group has a couple of different brands, do they all work the same, or is there like a different relationship between you guys and Ford versus you guys and Audi and you and Volkswagen? How does that work?
It is all different, and each manufacturer has its own programs and whatnot. So it is different. Every manufacturer is different. Even within VW and Audi being the same company, they operate very differently. It's kind of bizarre in that world.
Okay. So you obtain the car from the manufacturer, and that car has a manufacturer suggested retail price. But I think this is another thing that not a lot of folks realize. That is a suggested sales price. Is that correct, Steve? The dealer ultimately has full discretion as to what they want to let that car go for.
Yep. So the dealer will have a built-in margin between what the invoice price is and what the MSRP is. And that's generally considered the markup on the vehicle. However, there are other like holdback, for instance. There's different monies that come even below the invoice price that all play into the profit on that particular vehicle.
Interesting. And that invoice price is basically what the dealer obtains a vehicle for. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Any spiffs or specials or holdback, anything the manufacturer pays to the dealer below that invoice price for selling the vehicle all comes when the car gets sold.
Interesting. Okay. Now let's dive into a little bit about what we were talking about earlier. And I think that this is really interesting. And look, markups have been around, as I understand it, since the beginning of the automotive industry, right? They became so prevalent in 2020. I think that maybe they became more well known to the general public. Mm-hmm. But apparently even back like in 2002, PT Cruisers were like the car to have, and there were like markups. Gosh.
Well, I remember like walking into a Subaru dealership, right?
Yeah.
So this was like 20 years ago, and there was a WRX on the floor, and it was marked up.
Right.
It said, I don't know, regional adjustment, or I'm not sure what the language was, but it was a certain language, and that vehicle was, you know, pretty desirable, pretty popular, and there was a price adjustment on it.
So, Steve, one of the big reasons we heard as to why they became so prevalent in 2020 was, of course, due to the fact that there was a shortage in vehicles. Dealers were having a hard time obtaining these vehicles. Now, why did your dealer group not put market adjustments on vehicles? Talk me through the reasoning behind that.
Ultimately, it was just not the right thing to do for the long term.
Okay.
So could we have made more money on vehicles during COVID? Of course. Literally everybody was doing it around us. And I shouldn't say everybody, because there are dealers like us that are also looking, you know, the group's been around since 1984. Mm. You don't survive from 1984 with the same group because you're selling a car today. Doesn't make a difference. I'd rather not sell the car today if I could maintain a long-term relationship. So, you know, to us as a group, it's all about the long-term relationship. Our customer base is really large with our group. Our loyalty is very high with our group. And because our service and our sales departments are very long tenured, for that reason, we don't see the ups and downs that a lot of groups see that are more interested in the today result versus the long-term result. So I think it's more or less a culture thing with our store, more than like, say, a specific decision.
Right. And do you think you see tangible results based on that? Like you mentioned the loyalty within the group, but do you see regular customers coming back year over year to purchase new vehicles through your group specifically?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think it makes sense for most businesses or any business, right? Like here at TFL Studios, we can make a really wild clickbaity video, and it could burn bridges, you know, with many different people. But why would we do that, right? We could get a lot of views today, but we could lose, you know, months down the road, right?
Yeah. And it was the main thing was the commodity car. I totally understand a very low production, whatever car you want to talk about, you know, some kind of Porsche or some, you know, real low production Corvette, C06 or Z06, whatever. Maybe. But I mean, people were paying, you know, markups on a Jetta. It's right. Like, that's silly.
Yeah.
Or an Atlas. No, I mean, I think personally, Steve, I think that was a really wise decision. The challenge is, I think that because of the dealers that were putting markups on an Atlas and a Jetta, right? It brought to attention to a lot of folks during COVID this negative press, which I really think hurt the dealer model in general. Do you feel the same way, Steve? And how do you respond to that?
Definitely. I think it took the dealers 30 years in reverse. You know, I think that with the transparency that you can get in today's day and age, I think that it took a lot of that away, because there was a lot of dealers that were of the mindset that if you don't want to pay $5,000 over for your Kia Telluride, then go buy something else.
Right.
And I don't think how you can recover from that. You know, you don't, as a consumer, you're like, okay, well, I'm about to give you $50,000. You know, and of course, the dealer's not making $50,000, but that's a lot of money to a consumer to spend on somebody that really couldn't care less if they spent it or not.
Yeah, interesting. So how did you guys fare during COVID with some of the supply chain challenges and with inventories?
So we were in the same boat. Inventories were slim, but we did a really good job with selling into the pipeline. Okay. So a lot of times you won't really sell the car until it's very close to the dealership, because as Americans, we don't like waiting for things. But during COVID, everybody kind of was in that mode, like, hey, I should probably wait. So most everything that we had delivered through that era was pre-sold, like the minute it was released from the factory. We would just keep a list, you know, and we'd have a couple cars on the lot. If it was an Atlas, for instance, you know, you could certainly drive it and check it out and all that stuff. And then we had a list of available units. And, you know, we could work the numbers on that. You know, we kind of, there was no incentives from the manufacturers to speak of for the most part. So it wasn't like we weren't sure what the price was going to be. We already knew what it was going to be, because we were pretty sure that the OEM wasn't going to give us anything extra. Right. So we were able to work the pricing and whatnot. And we were lucky. Well, not lucky, but, you know, during that time period, the used cars were not depreciating. So it wasn't like we were going to work the deal and then in 2 months their trade was going to be worth so much money less, because it wasn't. In some cases, it was worth more.
Yeah.
So it was very easy to sell into the pipeline, because the variables, which is normally there, weren't really there during that time.
And I know it varies based on manufacturer, but for you specifically, how does it work with obtaining cars from the manufacturer? So do you have like a set allocation where they're all the same trim, or you're getting 43 SELs, or do you have the ability to kind of pick and choose the color? How does that process work?
So with Volkswagen and Audi, you build every vehicle. So they give you the piece of allocation with the trim line. So for instance, they know they're going to build X amount of Q5 45s, and you can say, okay, I want this many colors and options and everything like that. Similar to Ford, and then VW is like a half and half, where they have cars that are already produced and you can pick these ones. And then they have ones where you can change the colors and all that are a little deeper into the pipeline. So every manufacturer is a little bit different like that, but the way that they allocate is based on sales and the speed of sales. Kind of goes back to that, move them as quick as possible and you'll get more.
Interesting.
So yeah, so there's a mathematical format for every manufacturer to calculate allocation when it comes to how many you have available, how many the region has available, and the day supply. So if you have a very long day supply of, say, Jettas, for instance, when the allocation comes out for this month, you're probably not going to get Jettas.
Okay.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your car. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your car, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your car hassle-free and fast, go to tflcar.com and click Sell Your Car in the navigation menu. Or click on the HiRoad ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. HiRoad makes it easy, and we like easy.
I wanted to dig into the color choices a little bit more.
Go for it, Andre.
I'm very passionate about this. I own a bright yellow pickup truck.
That is a color. That is true, yes.
So oftentimes, like, I would go, you know, just driving by a dealership lot, and I see a lot of white, black, and gray or silver vehicles. And I'm like, well, that's a little bit boring, right? So, I mean, there's a lot behind that, right? I mean, does it depend on vehicle type, or can you kind of talk a little bit more about it?
Yeah, as far as it does depend on the vehicle type. GTI, for instance, GLI, they're generally speaking not in that same realm. But I'd say maybe for the past 10, 15 years, white, gray, and black are the top color choice, the top selling colors in the country. There's an aspect of safety, because, you know, you're under pressure to move that car quickly. Sure. So there is an aspect of safety, knowing that, okay, I can order this in, you know, on the Audi side, I can order this A5 in district green with the brown leather, which is gorgeous. Or I can just order it in gray with black interior, knowing that there's 10 people looking for a gray one and one person looking for a green one. It's all about strategy, because I like having the color, because generally speaking, people will come from a distance to get the color. The color is, you know, it's 1 of 100 instead of, you know, 1 of 75. And people will travel for it. And I think it's cool to have, I like having the color. It's difficult with Audi, especially, we call it the German rainbow. It's like gray, 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 light gray, dark gray, and gray, or white and black. Right. So, you know, I like the colors. I'm with you. And maybe because I've been around it for so long, if it's different, I like it. So, but there is a little bit of a safety net of having the norm colors versus the outlier color.
So do you think, like, so I ordered a special color on my pickup truck, right? It was nitro yellow. Do you think in general, is it true that I may have trouble selling it because there's not many people who like that nitro yellow? Or is it just, I'm fine? Or what would your...
It depends. I guess it depends on where you're selling it. Some dealerships, if you're trading it, some dealerships may see it as a negative because they're in that small box. But I think anybody that's not in their little tiny four walls likes that, because you like you have to have a little splash of color on your lot. You can't just have all of that. So in your case, no, because you're you know, with having the Trail Boss, it's kind of like a more adventurous kind of package. It fits that color. So if you took that same color and put it on like a super pedestrian, like, you know, say Prius, for instance, then maybe that would be a negative.
Interesting.
Because that particular buyer would shy away from that. But in your case, if you're, specifically with your truck, I think it suits the truck well.
Yeah. No, that's a great point, Steve. And kind of off of that, right? So say you have a big allocation of Q5s coming in, right? And Audi has a huge order book of options to choose. How do you choose what options to put on the cars that are going to be on the dealer? Do you kind of learn over the years what options people want versus don't want to pay for? How does that process work?
Yeah. So I order vehicles with the buyer in mind, not with the car in mind. So I relate it back to my Ford days. You know, you wouldn't put, like, okay, let's go way back to like when we were selling 1 million Tauruses a month. You wouldn't put, like, you know, the rear spoiler and the center shifter and then make the car gold with the tan interior, because your end user of those two things are very different. You know, the gold with tan buyer was a column shift bench sheet person, not this column, you know, not the floor shift with the rear spoiler. That's kind of an extreme, but
No. It's a good example. Yeah.
So when ordering, I typically, having the experience that I have, will order the car for who I imagine the end user to be. So, you know, the sportier colors with the sportier packages, you know, the more, you know, older clientele with the lighter interiors and the more sedate exteriors, and kind of package the cars around that.
Yeah. Are there certain options today that you find that consumers don't want to live without? What are folks really coming to you and asking for?
I think Apple CarPlay, Android Auto is something that people have become accustomed to. With VW and Ford, they kind of became popular maybe 2016-ish. So now you're in one or two or even three lease cycles of people that have had it for years now. And that's a tough one for them to go without. During the COVID shortages, blind spot monitoring was a problem getting, and that was a very difficult hurdle. Because again, in that same time period, blind spot monitoring became very popular, and it was difficult to have it and then not have it. So I think the safety features and the technology features are always super popular. As much as we hate, you know, touch screens and touch capacitive buttons and stuff, consumers love them. So, I don't particularly, but consumers do.
Interesting. So that's an interesting thing. So one thing which is a negative from these manufacturers of not being able to sell to the consumer is that they may not have that same experience that yourself, that your sales folks are having. You know, granted, it may be anecdotal, but firsthand experience of what folks like. So that touch capacitive thing is surprising to me because that's one that like every journalist seems to hate. Mm-hmm. But you find in general that your buyers like that, huh?
They do, yeah. And I think it's because it's like new and exciting. And like generally speaking, I think most journalists, being in and out of cars so frequently, just never really get settled in the car. So it is annoying because it's like it's out of your normal routine and like it's not intuitive when you first get in it. Yeah. But obviously most consumers, like, it's new and exciting. They get the feel for it. They get to know it. And then that's just like, that's it.
So say there was an option that like we liked, but consumers just hated, for example, or we hated and the buyer was hating. Do you have channels? Like, are there meetings with the OEMs where you meet with them and you say, hey, people really don't like this. Like, this isn't working. Or we've got a lot of people asking for this option on this package, which can't be done with this. Like, are there ways you can communicate to Volkswagen and Ford and Audi what's working and what's not?
Yep. Yeah. Every dealership will have a sales rep and a service rep that will then have an ability to go up the chain. But there's also a dealer council. Every manufacturer has a dealer council where there's a specific set of dealers where they each have a rep of, you know, say there's 6 or 12 dealer reps for a specific region. And there's a lot of stuff that gets done in that regard through dealer council. So dealer council will have a meeting with the higher ups. And before that meeting, it's what are we having a problem with in the field? What do we need? You know, what are the hot points that we need to speak with the higher ups with? And then as a group, the dealers can then engage with through dealer council.
Oh, interesting.
Very cool.
And then there's like conventions or meetings, right? I mean, are those like annual things and are those useful?
They are useful. A lot of times you'll see the future product, you know, every now and then you'll see some leaks out of those type of meetings and whatnot.
Yeah.
It just gives you a chance to get back to once a year, kind of drink the Kool-Aid and just kind of like get out of your daily routine element. And, you know, be around other dealers and, you know, have ideas and stuff that you talk with. And but it's basically a sales session from the OEM selling the dealers the fact that they're a great OEM, you know, is the bottom line, which is good. Every now and then, you know, it's I guess it's kind of like when you guys, I would imagine anyway, when you guys go on a program versus getting a launch via a digital packet, like having a car show up, like when you go there, you're immersed in it and it's like, OK, yeah, this is cool. I don't know. Certainly never been on a program, but that's what I imagine.
I mean, I think one thing that we forget often, and I have to remind myself sometimes, and ultimately, when Volkswagen is selling a car, they're not selling it to us, right? They're selling it to Steve, whose then job is to sell it to us. So yeah, I mean, down the line, it's the person who's buying the car, but really it's that there's that really important transaction that has to happen between the OEM and the dealer. So Steve, one question I had for you. You know, we have a lot of comments on our channels about vehicles being too expensive. And then, of course, even across a single vehicle line, not being able to purchase some of the lower end trim. Now, from a dealer side, do you make less money you know, selling a base model ID4 versus a fully loaded? Does the OEM make more money? How does that work?
Yeah, the OEM definitely makes more money as you go up the ladder. They will definitely want to build the higher specs. But if the higher specs are not selling, it just costs everybody money.
Okay.
So, yes. So, and then the same thing with the dealers. So the difference between the invoice amount and the MSRP is a percentage, and it's the same across the board.
Okay.
So generally speaking, the more expensive the MSRP, the more markup is in the car. It's minuscule, though. One thing I will say is dealers will sell what consumers want.
Yeah. Interesting.
So if everybody wants an S Jetta, then they'll be like, you need to make more S Jettas. Right. I have enough SELs. I could sell 10 more cars, albeit for less money each. Give us more base models. And eventually they'll react. It's a very, very slow reaction.
Interesting.
But and that kind of comes around the EV world as well, because a lot of people are like, oh, the dealers don't want to sell EVs. I assure you that the dealers will sell anything the consumer wants.
Right.
And I've heard this sentiment from several different friends in the industry too. It's like, it's a business, right? It's not like I'm against or for a base model or I'm against this. Mm. It's a business, right? We want to satisfy customers and we want to do this. But we get so many prevailing comment we get is like, give me roll down windows, crank windows, and I don't know.
Yeah, but my question to Steve is like, do people really want that? Or do they actually want, okay, yeah.
They say they want that, but when it comes time to buy the car, they don't want that. You can't show your neighbors when you get home your brand new shiny car and then open the door and have them see crank windows. You just won't do that. Yeah. And what people say and what people want are two very different things, because like I was just, we were just, a friend of mine actually was just purchasing a new Jetta. And they drive a lot of miles per year. So fuel economy was a thing. Safety features were a thing. And it was like the least expensive, least expensive, least expensive. And, you know, we had a Jetta Sport, which is floor seats, manual seats, not heated seats, but it has Apple CarPlay and all the safety features, all the technology in terms of like semi-autonomous driving, lane keeping, the whole bit, $22,000. I'm like, this is the car that everybody says that doesn't exist. It does exist. Right. And he got an SEL. Of course he got an SEL. Because it had heated and cold seats and a heated steering wheel. So, but I mean, that's just the thing, you know. There is that subset of buyers that's like, four wheels and a steering wheel, I'm good. But it's just very, very small.
Pretty small subset, yeah. And like I found this, like one of my new favorite hobbies is complaining about Wrangler prices.
Oh, yes.
And I'm doing a very good job of it. Thank you, Andre. Uh-huh. No, it's true. Like when I talk to folks like Steve and even in the Jeep world, like we all want the Sport Wrangler, at least according to the comments. But then when a dealer ends up with a Sport Wrangler, it ends up sitting there because people want the Rubicon with the leather seats and that kind of thing in the real world.
Yeah, it's very much a keeping up with the Joneses thing, probably now more than ever, realistically.
Yeah.
So talking about kind of prices a little bit more, Steve, what do you find that folks are doing more of in 2024? Are you seeing more leasing? Are you seeing with people paying in cash? Are you seeing these crazy long loans? What has been the trend?
The trend is been going. It's tough because COVID definitely put a bump in the road there. For our market, Philadelphia is a lease market. It is a higher percentage lease market. But even in that regard, it's still 35%, which is a high lease number. Hmm. Philly is a lease region. So I would say that leasing is probably, if you had to look at like year over year, it would be a little misleading because last year leases were terrible. The year before that, they were even worse. And now they're coming back to reality.
Yeah.
So, you know, an Atlas last year was $800 a month, you know, and there were people coming out of like three or about old Atlases at like $450. Like what there was a lot of people over the past year or so have been taken out of the new car market because they purchased their leases.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because they really didn't have a choice. They were priced out of the new car market, you know, particularly in that like three-row SUV. And that wasn't just a VW thing or a Ford thing. It was kind of across the board where they were $500 a month cars with a couple grand down, you know, 3 years ago. And they were coming back and they were a third more, you know, $600, $700 a month. during COVID, you could kind of get away with it because a lot of people had equity. They, generally speaking, you wouldn't have equity in a lease, but they did. So that extra bump in payment was kind of masked by the fact that they could trade their lease in and get some equity there. But once that went away a year ago, the lease payments were just so unaffordable that a lot of people just purchased their vehicle out.
Right.
And now they were religious, you know, religiously leasing a car every 3 years, and now they're in the buy cycle. So there's going to be a little bit of a lull when that, you know, that'll kind of probably gradually come back. But there was a bit of an issue with the leases. We, generally speaking, don't like to do the long-term loans unless you just absolutely have to. Yeah. Again, that it's just not the ideal thing for the consumer.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Steve. I think you're right on.
And usually the manufacturer like Ford or VW or Audi, they'll have their own financial arm, right? So the consumer can actually use them as the bank, right?
Sure.
But the consumer can bring their own bank too, right? Or whatever they want.
Yeah. A lot of people think that cash is better when you're negotiating a car deal, when in reality, the dealership makes money on the financing. So the cash is actually not, it may have been, you know, 30 years ago, but nowadays it's not. But yes, you can arrange your own, bring your own money. You can certainly do that. But a lot of the OEMs are back in the subvented rate game now. So that's a little bit less of a thing. Like right now, you can get 0.9% for 5 years on an Atlas, which is spectacular when interest rates are 6-7%.
Yeah. And those rates, are they determined? And same thing with the lease rates. How much of that is at the dealer level versus how much of that is at the OEM level?
There, if it's through, in this example, Volkswagen Credit is 100% driven by the OEM. Outside of that, that's at the dealer level. So if you just walk in and you just like, you know, and there's not a subvented rate on the car and the dealer provides the financing for you, you fill an application out, they'll usually look at a couple of different banks for you and say, okay, these are the rates. So we're going to use this ABC bank. That's all dealer level stuff.
Oh, interesting. Okay, very cool. Now, Steve, in regards to the actual transaction, what is your dealer group's policy on negotiation versus fixed price?
So we would love to do a fixed price. Consumers, again, something they say they would like, they don't. Hmm. At least in this area. It could very well could be a geographical thing too. You know, it's going to age me, but it worked really well for Saturn.
Okay.
Well, I mean, forget about the fact they're out of business. That was not sarcasm.
Because but they were in business.
That was a satisfactor. That was a high satisfaction piece of buying a Saturn was, hey, the price is on the window and it is what it is. Every dealer would just love to omit every good dealer would love to omit the negotiation piece and the silliness and just the price is what it is. But consumers ultimately want to feel like they have it, like they got a deal.
Okay.
You know, and that comes a lot of times with endless amounts of shopping, whether it be online, in person, and everything. So every dealership pays the same amount for the car.
Yeah.
So in reality, on a $50,000 Atlas, there is about a $2,500 spread from invoice to sticker. Everything else is manufacturer given, which you're going to get in any store. So realistically, out of that $50,000 transaction, a very small portion of it is how good a negotiator you are.
Sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, and that was the key thing you said, I think, right? Like that invoice amount is going to be the same across every Volkswagen.
Across the board, 100%.
Very interesting.
Now, Steve, let's transition into a topic which everybody loves to argue about, which is electrification.
Oh, yay. So I was waiting for this.
In your area, what are consumers' preferences towards EVs? Are they selling or are they not selling?
That is a loaded question, as you know. I would say that so our Westchester location, which is only 50 miles from this location, was one of the top EV dealers in the entire Northeast region all through COVID on ID4. And so we were all in. I drove one for 2 years. Our salespeople had them. It was great. We loved them. The consumers were waiting for as long as 2 years. You know, they would reserve it online. Oh. We were totally cool with that model. That was great. But after the production caught up with that initial flash in the pan, it's now dropped off dramatically. Now, that's a double-edged sword, because the overall EV sales are stable, if not growing, across the board, with the exception of Tesla. Tesla's down a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, every OEM is selling more EVs than they did last quarter, and then more than they did last year. That's because there's more to be had, and there's crazy deals. Like, I watched your video on the Leaf.
Yeah.
That's a bit of an extreme case, but in reality, you can get a really good price, specifically lease price, on almost any EV. So the long answer is yes, it's a very small portion of the business.
Yeah.
The short answer is I think that EV buyers are going to continue to grow.
Okay.
No. Much more organically. It was, for some reason, I don't know what it was, everybody had to have an EV 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't know what drove that. I don't even have a good feel for what drove that. But, you know, it wasn't like gas prices are spiking or anything else. And then it stopped overnight. It was like you had a 1 year wait to get an ID4. And then, like, the next day we had 10 in stock. Wow. It was so quick. I don't know what it was. But to answer your question, it's still mainly gas. I think a lot of people have questions on hybrid, plug-in hybrid, stuff like that. And I think if the industry wasn't kind of pushed into EV, and it went more, you know, similar to like Toyota. Okay, we went from all gas to hybrid to plug-in hybrid to full EV. There would have been like an organic growth there. And instead, it was just like all gas, bam, you got to buy an EV. And the government's going to make you buy it, and they're going to come take your gas car away in 5 years. And yeah, so now, it was crazy.
Now that that kind of two-year rush has ended, and you have plenty of ID4s, it sounds like, in stock, or e-trons, or whatever it may be, when they do sell in 2024, whenever we're recording this, July, are they selling because folks are wanting to purchase an ID4 or an e-tron or what may have you? Or is it because there's so many incentives on the hood, or there's cash on the hood from the OEM standpoint? What is selling those vehicles when they actually do sell?
It's consumer driven. It would be very difficult for a consumer to come in for a gas car and flip to an EV. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, it's like two camps. There's very few people in the middle. It's either I definitely am not ready for that, or I'm all in.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, from an allocation standpoint, your brands are doing a good job of giving you the cars you want? Like, do you feel that ID4s and e-trons and whatever it is are being kind of pushed on you, or do you feel like you have the supply is matching demand?
They're not being pushed at all.
Oh, okay. Very interesting.
Yeah, they're not being pushed at all. So in fact, they're doing a pretty good job, at least on the Volkswagen side, of putting the EVs where they sell.
Okay.
So they sold about 40,000 last year in the ID4 world, which was a huge increase. So they sold like 22,000 the year before. So that they're doing a good job of putting the EVs where the EVs are selling. So I would imagine, you know, not in the middle of the country and a lot in California and in Connecticut, New York, all that. But generally speaking, no. There was a time in the past, specifically with Ford, where they would come in and it was a grind. Like, they had all these cars that they were going to try to get you to take, and you didn't need them.
Okay.
And that's not really a thing with VW, and it's really not been a thing with Ford lately either. But there was a time period. I mean, I remember being in meetings. This is taking an uncomfortable amount of Ford Windstars, because the manufacturer, like, you know, we had to. If you can even imagine having that conversation.
You're dating yourself again, Steve.
I know.
Steve, any number of Windstars is an uncomfortable number.
I totally agree.
What about Aerostars?
Yeah, that's
that was before me.
It'll be an unfortunate truth.
Do you have any vision into what's happening at the Ford store, like as far as electrification or pickup trucks? Because Ford kind of walked away from a lot of sedans, and I mean, they weren't really heavy into SUVs. And what's happening there?
Yeah, so at the Ford store, there was a big, I don't know if you've read any of the articles related to what they wanted the stores to do with level three charger installs and so on and so forth, you know, a million and a half worth of required infrastructure at the store in order to sell EVs. Recently, they've kind of backed off on that. There were a lot of stores that were like, I just cannot put pencil to paper to make a $1.2 million investment in chargers selling, you know, 5 Mach-E's and 10 Lightnings a month.
Yeah.
Knowing that the chargers might even be out of date in 5 years.
Mm. Well, because it would take so long to recoup that investment, right?
Yeah.
Sure, sure. Yeah. So as in the VW world, we installed, it was a requirement. It was an opt-in requirement. So that's a double-edged sword. If you wanted to, you could do it. And you got additional benefits for doing it. Like Volkswagen changed their logo maybe 3-4 years ago with the more modern script.
Yep.
So all the dealers had to buy new signs. And signs are expensive, you know, $100,000 plus to get all your signs redone.
Oh my God.
And that was part of, hey, what level of EV dealer are you going to be? Are you going to be level one where it's like, yeah, we'll sell a couple maybe? Level two, we're like, yeah, we're committed. Or level three, we're like, we're getting all the service equipment in the service department. We're training all of our people and we're installing chargers. And if you were at that level, they're like, cool, we'll pitch in on your signs. So it wasn't like you have to sell EVs or you have to do this, but it was more or less like, this is where we're going. If you want to come with us, we'll help you out.
Yeah, very interesting. So Steve, kind of piggybacking off of like what consumers want versus what the enthusiasts want. I know Volkswagen's been in the news lately because of like the discontinuation of manual transmissions in some of their products, like, you know, GTI. Golf R, not GLI though. Good for Volkswagen.
Yes,
because I have to say that for the enthusiasts out there. But you know, we always see these comments that people want more enthusiast cars. Like, I would totally buy that car if it had a manual. But in the real world, does that translate to actual sales?
No.
Okay.
No. So the manual buyer is it's so small right now, and I love a manual, and I love a GTI manual or Golf R or whatnot. It's just, but in today's world, I guess they just cannot, very much like we couldn't put the pen to paper on the $1.2 million investment in charging.
Yeah.
If, you know, to develop that, a good manual transmission that's going to satisfy the enthusiasts is just too costly for the amount of manuals they're going to build and install in vehicles. I understand it. I don't like it. I would prefer that those certain models were just always manuals, but I understand what the reason is.
Yeah. And I'm sure if you were to look at the numbers, like the number of GLIs or GTIs that Volkswagen sells compared to the number of Tiguans you move, it's got to be...
It's like 10 to 1.
Yeah.
So, and then Volkswagen's going to make that investment on that 10% of cars for 1% of the consumers of the 10% of cars. That's a small number. Yeah.
I get it. I don't agree with it. I don't like it, but I get it.
So, Steve, as we kind of wrap up here, a couple last questions for you. As we see more manufacturers try to move to this direct-to-consumer model, how is that impacting your business, and how do you feel that the dealer plays a role in 2024?
I like the prospect of the... it kind of goes back to the taking the negotiation piece out.
Mm.
So when the ID.4 launched, it launched on a reservation platform.
Okay.
So you had to reserve it through VW.com, and then you had to pick a dealer on which you wanted to deliver the vehicle. And that was kind of like, there was some synergy there between the OEM and the dealer. Ultimately, the dealer could still control the price of the vehicle, but it was very seamless. So I don't necessarily think that that's a terrible model in reality. I don't mind that at all. But what I do know is that people hate going to car dealerships.
Hmm.
And people hate going to car dealerships, generally speaking, because a lot of what happened through 2020, that's just one example, you know, however it is. But with a store like ours, with a group like ours, you know, so much of our business is referral business, because we're, you know, our philosophies and treating the customer the way they want. They that's, they'll come here regardless of the car. You know, I have people that just will only do business with a Garnet store because it's not just the fact that they're getting a fair price and they're getting good treatment when they buy it. They're going to own that car for 5 years. They're going to interact with my service department tenfold what they interact with my sales department. And that's so important, which you kind of lose when the manufacturer is just like, just buy it online and we'll send it to your house and whatnot. And not a lot of people think about that. It's kind of where the Tesla model really stumbles. Maybe not so much as it did when they first launched. But you know, they want to be able to pick up the phone when they have an issue in a year and have it be taken care of like that, you know, like, and there's a lot of dealerships that don't provide that. And I understand that, but there's a lot of dealerships that do across the whole country. And, you know, those are the stores that sponsor the Little League team. And those are the stores that do special things for the first responders. And there's just so many good stores that are generally not talked about because of the overwhelming volume of when a store is not good. You know, yeah, those are the stores you hear about. But I think there's a little bit of a 10%, 10%, 80% rule. You know, 80% of the stores out there are pretty good.
Yeah.
10% are awesome and 10% are terrible.
Interesting.
And it seems like the terrible ones are the ones that, yeah, exactly.
Well, so what do you guys prioritize at your stores to make it a less stressful experience for someone? Like, what is the secret, without giving away the secret sauce to the other?
So it's so not secret. There's not a secret sauce. It's basically just like the transparency level. It's like, you know, we're never trying to make $1 million on one customer. You know, if it's the transparency, I think is a big, big deal. And more or less just being available in that personal level. You know, you're not a number. This isn't a transaction. This is a relationship. And it sounds like kind of corny and cliche, but in reality, it is. I can't tell you the amount of times where somebody has come in the door and they already knew what they wanted, and they don't leave anywhere close to that when they buy the car that they want. Because they thought they knew what they wanted, they did all the research online, and then when they got here, and they actually sat with a professional and went through the whole process, they ended up buying something less expensive, more expensive, more useful to them, whatever it was. I'll tell you a very quick story about during COVID when we could not sell, lockdown COVID, and we were struggling to be able to do deals remotely. Now it's something we do all the time. Like, if you bought a car right now, you could sign for it where you're sitting and as I'm talking to you, and we could do a walk around via FaceTime or whatever. And it's a whole different world. But back then, and it's only a few years ago, I had a customer when it first started, they were looking for an Atlas to replace their Tiguan, which was in the service department. They were driving an Atlas as a loaner. Cool. Love it. Picked one out online, worked up the price for them. They came in to pick up the car. They were in a crossport. They're like, "What? How do you get the third row seat up?" I'm like, "The crossport does not have a third row seat. The Atlas full size has a third row seat." And I'm like, that was an aha moment where I'm like, "Oh, the self checkout line just does not work for most buyers." Like, we just did an entire transaction. Of course, at that time we weren't allowed to be in person, but we just did an entire transaction where this lady was so sure that she just bought a $45,000 car. Basically over the phone, it isn't even the car she needs.
Right.
So, you know, there is a certain subset of the consumer that can totally do the self-checkout.
Yeah.
But I think most people, you know, especially maybe even in the older community, where it's like they want to sit down with somebody and go over the car. I need you to, I can't watch a YouTube video on how to work my infotainment. I need you to show me the car.
Sure.
And I think there's a value to that for sure when you have a relationship.
Did she end up getting her third row eventually? Did she figure it out?
She did. She did. We were like, okay, well, let's go ahead and let's squash that deal and start from scratch.
Good. Yeah, cool. Right on, Steve.
So I think, yeah, go for it, Andre.
Yeah, I guess a couple more topics as we wrap up, just really quickly. First of all, there's this topic I think that a lot of people talk about is electric vehicles may not need as much maintenance as non-electric vehicle. What's your perspective on that? Is that true? Are you worried about this?
Yeah.
How do you look at that?
And is that going to affect your bottom line? Because we get that comment a lot.
Definitely will. So the fleet average these days is 12 years old. So if every single car went to EV tomorrow, I'm probably going to be retired by the time that affects our bottom line.
Okay.
So yes, EVs do certainly need less maintenance when it comes to like oil changes and transmission service and stuff. The warranty work is kind of the same in regards to that. It's still going to need like tires and filters and so on and so forth. So yeah, there's no way around it. An EV will definitely need less care than a comparable gas car.
But they do need tires. I mean, a lot of them eat tires.
Yeah.
They're very powerful and fun to drive often, and they do eat tires. My other question was about accessories, right? And I'm coming from a little bit from a pickup truck, focus or SUV focus. And I think a lot of stores – I'm sorry, I've never been to your store, so maybe I'll fix that. Maybe I'll come over soon. But a lot of stores, when you walk into it, you see the new vehicles, right? But very rarely do you see here the different wheel options. Maybe, you can buy, different accessories. Do you see that as well, or is there an opportunity there, at least for like an adventurous vehicle? You're gonna have an ID Buzz soon, right? Which I think people will personalize, right? And accessorize. How do you look at that?
I do. So the accessory world is huge on certain vehicles. I knew the stat. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but the stat of how much an average pickup truck buyer spends after they leave the store. Mm-hmm. Tonneau covers, wheel flares, heavy duty floor, whatever it is.
But it's
big.
It's significant.
It's a big number.
Yeah,
it's
a big number.
So yeah, there is an opportunity. I think most dealerships generally do a poor job of that. And I think it comes back to the whole color thing. It's safe to not have the vehicles accessorized versus pigeonholing it into something. But it is. And there's not a whole lot of markup in accessories, which is probably the main reason the dealers don't concentrate on it.
Interesting. But, yeah.
No, I mean, I think that the Jeep model, which Ford is also now figuring out in a big way, where you could bundle in those big tires and the lift and also the winch it's
extra lights, all that stuff.
$9,000, which you probably don't have out of pocket, but if it's $17 a month, all of a sudden,
that makes a lot of sense. Yeah,
same thing with Bronco.
No, that's a good point. And then in terms of the tax credit with EV, so obviously you work for a couple brands that do have tax credits that can be applied to EVs. It used to be you paid the dealer and then you got the credit from the IRS later. Now it's actually being taken off the price. How does that process work, and has it been a mess getting it to implement?
No, it's not a mess. It's surprisingly, because it's a government program, so that's usually just a mess. But no, it's not. It's really not a mess. The website that is available basically will say, you'll put your info in, and based on your tax filings, it'll say you're either eligible or you're not eligible. You put the VIN number in, it tells you if it's eligible or not eligible, and if it is, how much it is eligible for. And then the government, we then pass that savings on to the consumer, upload the information to the government site, and then they'll go ahead and issue the money directly to the dealer. So the dealer just fronts the money. It's very similar to a rebate. When you get a rebate on a new car, the dealer fronts that rebate and then will get paid back from the manufacturer.
Yeah, interesting.
So it's very, very much the same thing. But also, I think so many of the transactions are lease, it doesn't even really come into play.
Okay.
Because the lease just gets it automatically.
Right. No, that makes sense. And a lot of manufacturers don't apply for it, but like specifically Volkswagen, right? They're very proud of the Chattanooga-built ID4s. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And then I don't know what the deal is in Pennsylvania, but we also have money back from, for example, Colorado on an EV. Do you have any deals like that in Pennsylvania? Like if someone were to fly in from Colorado to Pennsylvania to buy an ID4 or an ID bus? Or my wife, for example, who may or may not be looking for an EV, can you apply the state credits as well, even though you're out of state?
You cannot. So okay. the state credits are all in. So it depends on how the state does it. So bordering New Jersey does a $5,000 credit and no sales tax.
Yeah, right.
Which is a big deal. However, the dealer has to be in New Jersey and the consumer has to be in New Jersey. Uh-huh. So that's a tough one because it's so state specific. I'm not sure how Colorado works there.
No, I think it's the same way. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of money.
Interesting.
So you did not get that leaf for your wife?
No. Well, there was a lot of discussion. So what Steve is talking about, if you're
watching. How didn't you just get it just to have it?
Because
yeah, I know. I thought about it, but it's like the problem is then, Steve, I have to drive a Leaf.
Ouch.
But no, I mean, Steve brings up a good point. Like in Colorado, these EVs now, and does Pennsylvania have a state credit as well?
Okay. No. They have very, very small credit. It's nothing compared to either New Jersey or Colorado.
I'm quickly realizing that, like, both my wife and I are very anti-lease, more because of kind of like what it typically symbolizes, right? Like
like you don't own it.
Yeah, more it's just like I think especially to my wife, she grew up knowing people that had leases and they were just like they had this reputation for just like throwing money around and getting new cars, and that was like not something she wanted to be associated with. But like the more we look into, she's like a buy a car, keep it for 15 years. She's kind of in the minority. But like when you look into it, especially with some of these credits like New Jersey or Colorado offers, it doesn't really make sense to go out and buy a car if you can get a EV6 for $1,000 down and $110 a month on an MSRP of $49,000. Like that's unheard of, you know. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing it even in Colorado, like that Nissan dealer, you can get an Ariya, which is a $50,000 car for $189 a month, zero down. Or I can get a Pathfinder, which is a $40,000 car for $600 a month. Like it's crazy, right? The differences.
It is crazy, and that's just that's a lot of that is probably short term. Like I think it's a fantastic program to grab a hold of. Yeah. You know, like even that Aria at $200 a month. Most people spend more than $200 a month on gas.
Yeah.
If you had no car payment and owned your car and just put gas in it, you're still saving money paying $200 a month for the payment.
Yeah. But it is a like philosophical issue sometimes.
Well, yeah, she just likes to drive her wheels off her car, and I'm like, yeah, but if the government is paying you to drive it, regardless of where you stand politically, like it would make sense to take advantage of that program.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
How was I wanted to ask you before we leave. There was a cyber attack on a lot of like logistical software that every dealership was affected by, apparently. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, what happened?
Oh, really? I hadn't heard.
Oh,
yeah. So we are a CDK dealer. Our whole group is a CDK dealer. So overnight, we went from being able to do everything to being able to do nothing. So
before we continue, can you explain what CDK is and what that means?
Yeah. So what CDK is a computer software program called a DMS, the dealer management system, which essentially runs the whole store, goes through CDK. So when you go into the service department and they write a repair order for you and it prints out and you get your copy of what's being done and what was done, that comes out of CDK. So in that example, that data, once you're there and your car's there, it then will go electronically through CDK to a technician. The technician will then diagnose the problem, notate it in CDK, and then that will go to the consumer via a text and a video. And the consumer says, yes, do it, don't do it. That goes back to the technician, and then it goes back to the service writer to close it all out at the end. None of that worked. Very similar in sales. You put an internet lead on the website, it comes to the sales department, you then open a conversation, you show up, you like the car, we present numbers in CDK, you say yes to it, it then goes into the DMS, then it goes to the finance department, you sign the paperwork in CDK, and then when you're done and you leave, then that goes up to the accounting, where the accounting does all of the entries of the accounting, receipts your money, post the accounting, post the car deal to accounting to where, you know, it reports it sold to the manufacturer and all this other stuff. All of that is in CDK.
And that system was attacked, basically.
Okay. It was a cyber attack via ransomware, and we were down for just about 3 weeks and doing everything in paper. So we had to basically go back once it came live again and then redo all that stuff. Oof. like it happened. Very difficult for the service supply.
Did it affect your sales or ability to work, or you just doubled your logistical work, basically?
There were a lot of dealers that closed in the beginning.
That's insane.
Wow.
Yeah, because we didn't know in the beginning. It was like every day was like, oh, maybe today. Well, you know, 3 days in, we're like, we need to figure something else out because it's not going to be today.
Yeah, interesting. Did that affect your guys' sales and service in a negative way? Like, you think you lost revenue based off that?
Yeah, for sure, because the CRM was completely inoperative until 2 days ago. So there was no way to communicate with our customers in terms of sales prospects.
Sure.
So yeah, because that system was completely locked out. CDK was completely locked out. So, you know, it was the dark ages. I couldn't go back. I couldn't look up a customer that was interested in a car 3 weeks ago. They came out with an extra $2,500 on Q5 halfway through last month. And I was like, cool, who do I tell?
Yeah, right.
I don't have any prospects because they're all in CDK and I can't get in there. So yeah, it was tough.
It's a pretty crazy thing that you usually don't think about.
So Steve, like it sounds like CDK is pretty ingrained within the dealer community across the country. Like, are you looking at other solutions now that's happened, or are you going to continue using them?
So we haven't made that decision yet. There's not a whole lot of DMS companies in the country. So there's 18,000 some odd car dealers, 15,000 some are with CDK.
Wow.
Another big company was Reynolds, and they were the CDK 5-10 years ago. And their level of service was pretty poor. And that's kind of where CDK gained all this market share. So the reason that CDK got attacked is because, you know, as with anything, they were the biggest. So it's easy to inflict the most pain with the same amount of work on the biggest. Mm-hmm. So it's certainly something that could happen or could have happened to any of the DMS companies. So what was eye-opening was having all of the systems in with CDK. You don't have to do that. You know, you can have a CRM that's not CDK and it still integrates with CDK, but you can do your own thing over there. So
that's basically
the CRM is the inventory management, or
what? That's the consumer. That's like the customer management. So like, that's okay. Where like, you know, you would look up all your previous customers. You would interact, like when you get an email from a dealership, it comes from the CRM. So, but again, we don't have to have that go CDK, but you know, part of the thing with CDK is a lot like Cox Automotive. As they grew, they were buying all the external entities so that they can come to a dealer with a turnkey solution. Right. CDK, we can do your phone, just your service, your CRM, all with one bill. You know, and you know, in hindsight, probably not a smart move for us to do that.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, Steve, we're glad that you made it out of that. Is it back to normal now? Is it like...
It is. Matter of fact, we just posted the last June deal. What is it? The 12th of July. So we just got through the final stages of cleanup. And I've told my employees that we can only ever talk with June about June to our therapists. No longer allowed to talk about it in the dealership.
Wow. Crazy. It was that tough, huh?
Yeah.
It's tough because at the same, you know, you got a bunch of people standing around and they're like, all they want to do is their job. And like, it would be like telling your contractor to build you a house and give him a hammer and three nails. That's it.
That's terrible. That's really, really terrible.
Well, it's like YouTube going down.
Yes. Yeah, us. We would be in bad news. That would be bad for us.
Right.
Yeah, very similar. It's crazy how we get so reliant on our day-to-day technologies.
No, it's a good
reminder. I remember there was one day like 5 years ago where we published a really interesting video. And that evening, like 5 p.m. is usually like one of the more popular times for video. And YouTube went down at 5 p.m.
Yeah. But that's like exactly the same thing. We were like, well,
yes,
just stand around now. I think we can do.
And thankfully, it doesn't happen very often, so that's good.
Well, Steve, it was a pleasure talking with you, and I really appreciate your transparency. And if folks want to check you out, what are some of your websites or social handles?
So we are GarnetAuto.com, and all of our stores kind of that's a one umbrella, and then on all of our socials are just Garnet as well.
Great, and we will be seeing more of Steve because hopefully we've got an ID Buzz.
Yes.
On its way.
You guys are the first ID Buzz we got.
Wow.
It was a line. I was like, when we first got the first allocation, and like all the salespeople were like, oh, what color? What's this? I'm like, first one sold. Back wow. off.
Well, Steve, we really appreciate it. We're going to bring a bunch of content to you guys. So we're really stoked to fly out there, and we'll have to buy a lunch, Steve, because that's amazing. We were really excited about it. And yeah, I mean, are people excited about them or?
So excited. They're like they're like 5 years late. We're like, yes. We've been talking about the Buzz so long, just get it here.
We also feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was in high school when that thing debuted in Detroit.
The concept came out, gosh, 10 years ago. I don't know when.
Yeah. I know. We were so excited. And then last year, they're like, hey, we're launching the Buzz this year in Europe only. We're like, wait, what? Like, no, you guys need the long version. We know that. You know that. What do you mean?
Yeah,
this should not be a surprise here. But anyway, Steve, we're stoked about it. We're really excited. My dad chose a color before I had any input, but he was like, we gotta have this color. I'm like, okay.
I can still change it. What color do you want?
Let me see if I can go bribe him with bagels. I'll give that a go.
Did Roman choose black?
No, he didn't choose black. There's a few colors. He chose a good color. It's fine. No, they're all good colors. They're actually, speaking of colors, Andre, Volkswagen kind of went nuts with the colors.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
It really stoked.
That's
about
the vehicle that needs it. It needs color.
Well, Steve,
100%.
I really appreciate you talking to us. I learned so much in this podcast, and yeah. I think a bunch of our viewers did as well. It's cool to hear the story of a dealer that does treat its customers well, because there's so many stories, like you said, of the negative and
transparency. And, yes.
Yeah, folks, that's yes. it. That's all folks want. You're right.
I know. It's funny when you said the secret sauce, because that's something that I hear quite frequently. And it's we make it so much harder. I say we as an industry make it so much harder than it has to be. It's very easy. Just be nice. Yeah.
No, I think you're onto something. And folks, if you want to check out us, head over to alltfl.com. Steve, thank you for your time. And
see you.
My pleasure. All right. Thanks, guys.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.